this week I want to talk about trauma bonding. It's something that seems to be popping up a lot at the moment. So I want to explain what it is, what it feels like, and what it does to you.
Welcome to the Mindfuckery podcast, which is Feedspot's fifth must listen to podcast on emotional abuse. I'm your host, Elizabeth, and in here we explore areas others fear to tread. I'm a woundologist and I have been for over 20 years working with past life wounds, clearing ancestral trauma and working with this life wounding. Through my own personal journey, I know how much this hurts and how confusing life becomes. So many questions, no real answers. I'm the author of Finding Lily, which I wrote in Greece as my marriage was crumbling around me. The A to Z of emotional abuse followed as I discovered new words and language and phrases that I had no idea existed and I realised were now my reality. My third book, Divorce Matters, has been written to support you through the divorce process. It's a really important part. You can get the closure you need, heal the emotional wounds, and because your divorce matters are really important as well, it gives you permission to ask for the information you've been told not to ask for. I'm the founder of the Inner Healing Sanctuary and creator of Wound Talking, The Original Wound and Quantum Glow Healing. And I'm on a mission to educate as many people as I can on the effects of trauma in our lives and our children's lives and healing the wounds of our mothers and our fathers. It stops here, it stops now, it stops with us. So welcome along for the journey of a lifetime.
Hello, and you are very, very welcome. I hope you're well. This week I want to look at trauma bonding and perhaps incorporate a few other things. When I did my podcast on the 6th of April, which was the 2-year anniversary of the Mindfuckery podcast, I spoke about maybe doing some more along the A to Z. It's how I sort of launched my YouTube channel. And from there, I went on to write my book, The A to Z of Emotional Abuse. And if you haven't got that book, I promise you, it'll change your life. I will. I say this in a biased way. It sounds really egotistical of me. The reason I say it is I've actually just been out this afternoon with somebody. I taught her Reiki quite a few years ago now. And we met up for, I was going to say we met up for coffee, but we didn't actually. We had soda water and lime. But we met up this afternoon for catch up. And she said to me, I got your book. And she said, I'm not joking, it saved my life. She said, you were the first person that I told about what was happening in my relationship. And she said, you were the first person to validate me. And then that book just changed everything for me. She said, I tell everybody about this book that I feel needs to hear it, which is really, really kind of her. But it might be something that you need. So I want to share that with you. It's not a huge cost. I'm just going to tell you a story about how some of this came about. And I've actually written this in the introduction to the A to Z. And this memory is still really, really clear to me. I was sat on the arm of my sofa holding a mug of coffee. It was an October morning. The sun was streaming through. We had a big, huge window in that room. And I made this huge statement and I claimed that I don't ever want anyone to go through what I've been through. And that was it. This statement was made. These words came out of my mouth. They'd been said. They couldn't be unsaid. But the seed was planted. And how I got to that point was the night before, I'd been out with some friends. I'd been tagged in a post. The next morning, I received a text message from my estranged husband saying how he missed me. And he was driving over to a town near to where I lived. And he was reminiscing about all the good times. So I made this suggestion. Why don't you call in for coffee? I rearranged a lunch that I had. And there I was, sat on the sofa. And he was sat there, was taking the blame for everything that happened. And then these words just fell out of my mouth. It wasn't until a long time later that I realized that I couldn't stop anyone experiencing their own personal journey. They needed to have their own cathartic dark night of the soul because that is where the magic happens. That is where the healing happens. What I did realize was that I could help people recover a lot quicker and get through it a lot quicker than I did. I could help them find the information, what they needed to understand and understand how this has happened, because I really believe that knowledge is power. And when you understand the process, and when you understand who that person is, when you realize what's been going on, it helps chop away at the invisible chains that hold you to that relationship, the bonding that takes place. I started off by asking what happened, and I was like, who does that to another person? And then I fell down this dark and desperate hole of fear and total despair, and there was this pain, and it affected every part of my body, but it emanated deep within my soul, and that was the only time I felt anything. The rest of the time I was empty. There was nothing left of me, and I have described it like I would look in the mirror, I did not recognize the person looking back, and I was a shell of my former self. I replayed the relationship over and over and over again, asking what if and maybe, and believing that if I'd done something or said something differently, I wouldn't be in that place. Knowing that it was unhealthy, I was still believing I was in less pain in that relationship than I was out of it. Of course, this was a lie. It was all the trauma bond that had kept me trapped there. So I have been so, so grateful for the chance to heal. I had been broken open to allow the light to shine in. But for me, because the work that I'd been doing up and at that point, I think it was 15 or 16 years with the wounds, ancestral healing and the therapy side of it and the spiritual life coach and the spiritual side of it, I wanted to fully experience everything. I wanted to understand each stage, and I knew I was going to have to face many shadow parts that I didn't like about myself, that I didn't want to, things that I'd been hiding away from the world. But I was prepared for that. So trauma bonding. We develop bonds for survival in childhood, and they're usually with our caregiver, who is the foundation of our attachment. When our safety is threatened, it's them that we turn to for support and protection. Trauma bonding is one of the reasons it's so hard to heal from toxic and emotionally abusive relationships. The damage caused puts you in a state of confusion, and of course you had no idea the abuse was taking place. The term was actually developed by Patrick Carnes, who described it as the misuse of fear, excitement, sexual feelings and sexual physiology to entangle another person. Bonding happens in all relationships, but this type of bonding is one-sided, and it's why it's so easy for them to walk away, because they didn't bond with you. So when our safety is threatened in some way, we turn to our tribe for support and protection, and these bonds can actually be created in hours. It's a process that makes people more important to each other, and we create them for survival. This is why team building exercises use scenarios and techniques to help people instill trust in each other, and bonds are made during those activities. They're unique to the individual. So people who've experienced a traumatic situation together always have a bond of survival, and this happens in these relationships, but there's this intermittent reinforcement that happens during the cycle of abuse. Bonding is a really strong connection. You look it up in the dictionary, we'll use the example of glue, things that are bonded together, stuck together. When trauma bonding is used by the emotional abuser or the toxic person, it's done to gain power and control over you. So the cycle of abuse, during that idealization stage, they've positioned themselves as the caregiver. And during this time, what they're doing is, through this cycle, they're taking you back each time, and they're stripping you of everything. You come out of these relationships and it's like you've got like a three-year-old in charge of your life, because they literally have stripped you back. They've got taken every coping mechanism away from you. They've diffused the whole of your operating system, because they've had access to that. The bonds that you've created with your friends and family, They have challenged. They have questioned whether you should be trusting these people. They have questioned the relationships you have. They've pointed out things that they believe you reasons you should distrust this person. So during this idealization stage, they've positioned themselves as the caregiver. So you've now taken out whoever you would have turned to when your safety was threatened or when something happened, and they've put themselves in that place. And during that time, they are showering you with attention, with gifts, with meals out, days out. They are seeing and hearing you in a way that you've never been seen and heard before. And they're manufacturing, it's a key word here, manufacturing a love you may never have experienced. And then they start devaluing you. And this is with maybe slight put downs. They might introduce triangulation, their second favorite tool, or gaslighting, their first favorite tool. You might rationalize their behavior, believing that they care for you, which creates even more bonding. And this is one of the reasons why you feel so connected to them. And when the relationship ends, you wonder how you can survive. And this is due to the trauma bonding, but also the fact they've stripped every coping mechanism away. And either you have or they have isolated you. Now, the reason I say you have is, and I talk from personal experience on what I went through. I remember isolating myself because I knew people could see through the facade, and I didn't want to be challenged in any way for the relationship that I was protecting that I knew was bad. I might even have to repeat that myself. Does it sound real? Yes, that is exactly what happened. I isolated myself because it meant that I didn't have to have anyone challenge me with what's going on in my relationship for the people that were very close to me that could see how toxic it was. And I then didn't have to answer the question as to why I was protecting it, because I knew more than they knew. They could see it was toxic. I knew exactly what was going on, and they didn't know what I knew. So it was even more toxic than what they could see. So I actually isolated myself. One of the techniques of coercive control is isolation. So they isolate you. They create smear campaigns within the relationships that you have with other people. So they get you to question who these people are. So they are isolating you. But I also wonder whether we isolate ourselves. So it's the small put downs, it's the devaluation, the triangulation, where they play you off against somebody else, introduce a third party, make them feel or sound more important or in demand, creating and manufacturing, that word again, manufacturing jealousy. It's the trauma bonding that made it hard to enforce boundaries, which is why it's so painful to stay away from them. So after getting you addicted to oxytocin and dopamine through the love bombing, they start to introduce situations that release stress hormones. And this is done by the slight put downs, creating drama, manufacturing. Again, these aren't real. They're made. These situations that you go through, the scenarios that they create, the people they introduce into this triangulation, the formula of gaslighting manufactures emotions within you. So when your safety is threatened through their bad behavior, it's them you turn to for help and protection. And you rationalize their behavior, believing that they cared for you. And this created even further bonding, which is why you feel so connected to them. So when the relationship finished, your stress levels are so high, you experience fear and you can't imagine life without them. They, on the other hand, walk away playing the victim, and you very likely believe this is all your fault. And this pain that you now feel runs deep into your soul. So going back to the term trauma bonding, the misuse of fear, excitement, sexual feelings, sexual physiology, to entangle another person. As I said, I believe knowledge is power. By you understanding and understanding how this works, it's going to help you with your healing through the cycle of abuse, understanding they idolize you, they devalue you, they discard you, they take you round again. In the idealization stage, when they're creating a file on you, understanding who you are, a I'm not going to say inner standee because they'll never inner stand anything. That's an emotional connection, but they understand, they want to know everything. And part of that is what you've put up with in other relationships, the relationships that surround you, the people that are important to you. They need to know where your boundaries are and which ones they can push at. And they do it very gently to start with. Then they devalue you, these slight put down. So it's the things they admired you for. All of a sudden, they start criticizing you for. And you might have thought, that's weird. And you might have even questioned them, because I remember doing that. And then it was changed. Oh, I didn't mean it. Or I was only joking, or whatever the statement was. And then they take you through to the discard. And these are short discards. They can be slightly longer ones. They can be within the household, where they don't actually leave, but there's some sort of, you feel a disconnect, you know you've done something wrong, and you are there then in that cycle. Then they come back and they see you and hear you again, but the time in each stage gets shorter and shorter, and you just find yourself getting really confused, walking on eggshells and trying to work out how to avoid their narcissistic rage and how to stop other people triggering them and catering to every need, giving over every part of yourself, handing over your soul. It's like having a contract with the devil. So what do you do now? What can you do now to move forward? And it really depends at what stage you are in your journey. And it could be that you've just come out of the relationship and you're trying to work out what happened. You've got a lot of questions. You've got no answers. You've got no closure. It might be that you want to get back in that relationship. No judgment whatsoever. The pain out of the relationship was worse than being in it. Things you can do are, one, educate yourself, which is what you're doing, listening to podcasts like this, and maybe watching YouTube videos, but don't get sucked down that rabbit hole. Allow yourself a certain amount of time a day or a week. You take control. And it's these little tiny steps towards control that are going to help you. Remember, they tricked you into handing over everything. And the key word here is manufactured. All of these things are manufactured. That means that they are created, and the purpose was power and control. Reminding yourself who this person is and what they've done to you. I talk about grounding and breathing. I think they're key to healing. Having these honest conversations, that was a pivotal point for me, was actually communicating on a level with myself. And it helped me reparent a lot of the work that I do. The original wound particularly is all about reparenting. A lot of these wounds are created in childhood, and this is key to healing. If you see the trauma bond as lots of different tendrils, which means that you can break them one by one. And it might be that you wake up one day and feel completely different. I remember waking up every morning crying. I remember waking up thinking, oh God, I've actually woken up, because I didn't want to. I remember being consumed every single waking moment. And even when I was asleep, I used to have really bad nightmares. I remember one day getting to 3 o'clock in the afternoon and realizing that was the first time that I'd thought about him that day. And then there was another time months later, I realized that I hadn't actually thought about him for about 4 or 5 days. These are breaking tendrils one by one, then pinging off. The grounding and breathing will help you stay in your body. I promise you that is the safest place. Healing the wounds, doing the deep inner work is crucial. And then surrounding yourself with people who really understand. It really isn't helpful to have people say to you things like, which I heard, shouldn't you really be over this by now? Make time to be in the moment. And again, that is being in the body. It's so easy to drift off somewhere. That disassociation takes you away. Things that I realized that I couldn't do. My attention span was so small. I couldn't pick up a book and read it. I couldn't watch a full program on the television or a film. I was gone. I'd glaze over. I'd disassociate. A routine is amazing. Writing out your story. So those moments that you want to reach out, you can read the story and remind yourself of the pain they've caused. They created a character for you. That isn't them. And that is the hardest part. Those are some of the hard questions. Did he even love me? And who was he? They create masks for the person they think that you want to be in a relationship with. And they've moved on. They move on and they're shiny and squeaky clean. And the reason you don't recognize them isn't because you're the broken one, because you're defective. It's because they have no identity. So they've moved on. They've listened to their new partner, what he or she wants in that relationship, and they've created a sparkling new character to play. So what happens next is down to you. Find a group that can support you. Find people that know what you're going through. If you're not part of my group, come and join us in the Divorce Sanctuary. Start looking at ways that you can support yourself. I found journaling was amazing. In fact, I'm just about to write a course on that. And the knowledge helped me as well. And I had certain videos that I would remind myself. I'd go back and re-listen. In fact, I'm fairly sure one is where I found the word mindfuckery at the very beginning. And every so often I'd go and re-listen to that when I was having a particularly bad moment. And it was like a reset. So see if you can find your own mindfuckery video, podcast, something that reminds you, whether it's something on your phone. Get your story written out so you can see the timeline. It doesn't have to be in any order. List out the things that they said. It's my belief this is where we get trapped. It's the what they've said, and they're like little earworms that go in. That's why it's so important to challenge these statements and ask if they're true. This journey is perhaps painful. The way I work with people is never re-experiencing what they've been through or allowing them to re-experience it. But we get to the core deep root of what was going on. Releasing the trauma from the body, calming it down. That's what you need to be looking at. What you can do, how you can help yourself, what things you can do during the day that can help your body and your mind. If you'd like any more information on what I do and how I work, please, please reach out and we can have a quick chat. And as always, I'm sending you loads and loads of love.